Inside say where is it? Interview and music and performance and thing. You see, you can't see it out the door, but you can listen to it. So pick up on yourself.
Jaja is my everything.
And you see one of the big man coming to town this Saturday night. One of the big man. Them think they have it all. Shabba. Shabba.
Wanna take it to heaven it all? Oh no, no heaven at all. Jah children of Brimstone and no one. Wanna take it to heaven it all? Oh no, no heaven.
Them think so.
Wanna fight against the righteous and fall. Nation divided by itself shall never fall.
Oh and gosh.
Saint Peter and of him by Saint Paul. His 20 black buckle sitting on the wall. That color every one of the black buckle fall. 40 degrees the race trying to rule us.
Okay, after hours is here, so you know it's our time to get out of here. Some more child people until that time, same place. Don't touch the dial. Just make the radio station. Just walk on CKT, and if it broke, don't fix it. Don't move it.
Shabba a Brimstone and when you no think of no old man joy, yes no old man wet. And when the righteous move the heat, then start to fret. Shabba gone on the right and them each up on the left. Inna everything me do, me just do me best. Tell them think them have it all, but them no have it at all. Shabba children a Brimstone and no one gonna think of no have it all. Oh no, no have it at all. Wanna fight against the righteous and fall. All righteous people may say no welcome. When the Eden a move, gonna just chant fire burn. Read up the Bible, the Eden a fi run. Father, if it's thy will, let it be done. If it's not thy will, they cannot have fun. Father, this Adam, bring down the kingdom. Wanna think of no have it all. Oh no, no have it at all. The children a Brimstone, I know what. Wanna think of no have it.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news? I brought to you live.
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show, a part of CKUT's Off the Hour. Prison Radio has been on the air for more than 10 years. Prison Radio seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggle by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging our ideas about what are prisons and the people inside our jails. Prison Radio is dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. This is in the interest of forging stronger ties with incarcerated and non-incarcerated people, ensuring that prisoners have direct control over their representation, and that our understanding of prisons be informed by those who live inside their walls. We invite anyone who is interested in collaborating on programming to contact us. Those who have been affected by the prison system in any way are encouraged to get involved. You can email news@cqt.ca or prison@cqt.ca, or you can call us at 514-448-4041, extension 6788. You are listening to CQUT, Montreal Community Campus Radio, located on 90.3 FM on the dial, and www.cqut.ca online.
Oh, You are listening to Prison Radio here on CQT 90.3 FM. My name is Candace.
My name is Noah.
And we're your hosts for today's show. As many of our listeners may know, this past Monday, August 10th, was Prisoners' Justice Day, or PJD for short. Prisoners' Justice Day is a day meant to remember and honor all of the people who have died while inside prisons in Canada. For our Prisoners' Justice Day show, we bring you an interview with Nancy Van Stevendale, speaking about a manifesto written by a group of men who are incarcerated in a prison in Saskatchewan, as well as another manifesto written by some folks who are incarcerated in a federal prison in Canada. We also have a piece in which three people talk about a friend of theirs who died inside this past year.
As an introduction to our first piece on the show today, an interview with Nancy Van Stevendale, we're going to read out a manifesto that was written by a group of men who are incarcerated in the Saskatoon Provincial Correctional Center in Saskatchewan. This manifesto is titled, Doorway Out of Darkness, Education to Heal.
A Doorway Out of Darkness, Education to Heal, a manifesto by men who are incarcerated. Let us succeed and prosper. Brothers and sisters, let's strive to improve our lives. We deserve to be educated. We have rights. We are the jailbirds and hoodlums of the popular media, outcasts, losers, deadbeats, lifers, misfits. Perceived as waste to be rounded up, warehoused, locked away in overcrowded gyms and chapels, we are regularly excluded from the decisions that affect our lives. We are human. We are one, mind, body, and spirit. We have beliefs, smarts, strength, equality. We have insights, opinions, talents, interests. We are artists, writers, thinkers, workers, students, mentors. We are sons, fathers, mushams, brothers, friends, and community members. We are given little to no chance of rehabilitation. As our government cuts funding to our programs, we are called dumb, unwilling, unable, hopeless, and undeserving. But we are willing, we are capable, and we have the right to be heard. Our experience of education has often been traumatic, confusing, ostracizing, and disabling. The history we were taught was not our own. There are few supports of our needs. We felt like we did not belong. But we have a right to education that is motivational, empowering, strengthening, and inspirational. Independent, challenging, flexible, and focused. A welcoming, non-discriminating environment. Holistic, non-linear, and open to many teaching methods. Education is a journey that takes dedication, a tool for understanding and adventure, a source of pride, and a way to understand ourselves, our situation, and our rights.
We have the capacity to educate and be educated, design and deliver our own educational programs, meet with, support, motivate, and mentor each other, empower ourselves and others. We need to be respected for what we know and what we want to know. Have opportunities for expression, connection, and communication. Have access to resources, space, educational technologies, libraries, and teachers. Have access to a variety of educational opportunities, Indigenous languages, humanities and social sciences, creative arts, law and human rights, politics and voter rights, trades, food safety, life skills, public speaking, interview skills, budgeting, mental and physical health awareness, HIV, AIDS, and Hep C awareness, and AA and NA. Our educational programs must focus on what we need, not on what others think we need. Focus on our Indigenous history, culture, and knowledge from our perspective. Recognize all aspects of an individual, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. Address a range of needs, social, occupational, academic, physical, and rehabilitative. Include LGBTQ perspectives and awareness. Be available to all inmates, sentenced and remanded. Provide access to information about the justice system and the courts. Provide knowledge of the supports and programs available upon release. We stand in solidarity with our brothers and sisters who are incarcerated in this and other countries who often suffer great abuses of their human rights. We demand that our governments take action in our countries, but also at the international level, so that our health and human rights, including the right to education, are respected, protected, and promoted, and we are involved in all decisions that affect our lives. We are part of the solution, not part of the problem. So again, that was a manifesto called A Doorway Out of Darkness, Education to Heal, written by a group of folks who are incarcerated in the Saskatoon Provincial Correctional Center. And now we bring you an interview with Nancy Van Stevendale, who will be speaking in part about that manifesto that you just heard.
Okay, so my name is Nancy Van Stevendale. I'm an assistant professor in the Department of English at the University of Saskatchewan in Saskatoon. And I work mainly in the area of Indigenous literature, so that's my main teaching and research area. I also do a lot of work in community service learning and community-based education, so I have a number of different projects that I work on that are in the larger community and that involve community members and students coming together to work on various projects. One of those projects is the Inspired Minds All Nations Creative Writing program at the Saskatoon Provincial Correctional Center.
I mean, part of the reason why we're doing this interview is because of a manifesto that got published as part of the Inspired Minds program. The manifesto is also part of the Land People's Justice Initiative at the University of Saskatoon. Can you tell us a bit about the initiative first?
Mm-hmm, sure. So the initiative is the product of Professor Len Finley, who is also an English professor in the department here. It came out of a conference on reconciliation and decolonization that Dr. Finley held a couple of years ago, and that conference brought together a number of people who are working on research and as well as artistic and academic and activist work related to reconciliation, mainly in the context of Indigenous, non-Indigenous relationships. And so out of that conference, Len decided that he would like to do sort of a series of online manifestos that would look at what justice is in the Canadian context. So justice in relation to a number of different ideas, right? Land as well as nation-to-nation relationships between Indigenous and non-Indigenous peoples. I think the manifesto series was inspired by Idle No More, which was happening, and continues to happen now, but was happening in a sort of more explicit way at the time that the initial conference was held. And just an interest that he had in thinking through this question of justice. I think the online manifestos, there's a number of them that are there now. So one looks at food sovereignty and food security in the North, and one looks at the Idle No More movement and the impact of that. But I think Len's desire is to include more manifestos, and so to keep sort of collecting pieces from artists and scholars and activists across the country who are interested in these issues. For me, given my work in the context of the jail and educational programming, I was specifically interested in this question of what is justice in the context of the colonial institution of the jail, and then what is justice in relation to education, and what does that look like in prison?
So the manifesto also came out of this Inspired Minds program that you had mentioned earlier, and that happens at the Saskatoon Provincial Correctional Center. Do you want to talk a bit more about that program and also the jail in which it is situated? I think these things that you're talking about in terms of justice and relating to the justice aspect of this initiative are really interesting ways to start looking at situations that people face in different jails across the country.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so I'll tell you a little bit about the Inspired Minds All Nations Creative Writing Program first. It's a creative writing program that began in the summer of 2011. It's a partnership between the University of Saskatchewan and specifically myself, as well as a master's student in the Department of Indigenous Studies and the Aboriginal Cultural Coordinator at the Saskatoon Provincial Correctional Center. So she is our contact person there and helps to facilitate the program on the inside. So the creative writing program, I mean, it's straightforward in one sense. We do reading and writing in a variety of different genres. Life writing is particularly popular with lots of the people in the classes. Poetry, short fiction. In the class I'm doing right now, we just finished reading Letters to My Younger Self, which is written by the men in the Greaterford prison. And so we read that book, and now we're writing our own letters modeled on the work that those men did. The program was originally inspired by the success and the popularity of prison publication that comes out of SCC, the Saskatoon Correctional Center, and that publication is called Creative Escape. Our partner, the Aboriginal Coordinator, started that in 2010, and that's a publication of writing from the men at SCC, and that gets released every year, and it was really popular amongst the men inside, and had, you know, it was well received outside, and I know that our partner has sent it out to a number of institutions and libraries and universities across the country, but there was a real interest in sort of creative expression. So since 2011, we've had 23 8-week classes that have been offered in both low and medium security areas of the jail. It's important to note that, and this is really important for us, that the program is offered to both remanded and sentenced people in jail, and we do have a focus on areas of the jail that are for remanded inmates. So I'm sure people listening to this program would know what that means, but basically remanded people would be those who have not been convicted or sentenced. And so I'm not sure about the federal system, I assume it's the same, within the provincial system, which is where we're operating, people who are remanded are not eligible for programming, right? So they're not able to access the core correctional programs like addiction support and the other programs that corrections offers because they haven't been convicted or sentenced. And so it's important to us to offer programs to those people because they are, even within a system that offers very few resources, they are sort of at the bottom of the ladder there. They have access to very little support. Participation in the program is self-selected, so the men sign up if they're interested in the program. We've had approximately 138 people participate, and the University of Saskatchewan offers a certificate of completion if the men attend 6 out of the 8 classes. Sometimes that's difficult because of people moving around, and especially because it's a provincial facility, sometimes people aren't there that long, but we've had approximately 80 people receive the certificate of completion. So that's, you know, that's great. It's an official certificate. People can use it on their resume, et cetera. In terms of how the classes are facilitated, I facilitate a number of the classes, and then as well upper-level undergraduate students at the University of Saskatchewan, as well as volunteers. And there's a screening process for our volunteers, and we make sure that they're appropriately trained. We're usually looking for people who have some background in Indigenous studies because, of course, in Saskatchewan, as elsewhere, but in Saskatchewan particularly, Indigenous peoples are highly overrepresented in the correctional context, and so it's important for our facilitators to have a sense of the larger sort of systemic and colonial context that's created that situation. So the program is directed by the men, so it's definitely not about the facilitator or the teacher, and we try not to use the word teacher because it's really about a facilitator who's coming in to look at what do the men want to do with their time in this class, what are they interested in learning about, and then the facilitator brings in materials, readings, and exercises that can facilitate that. So it's not a top-down program at all. It really starts sort of grassroots level based on what the men are interested in. So the first class, we always ask, you know, we make a list of what are the topics and the genres of writing that people are interested in pursuing, and then we go from there to design the syllabus for the next 8 weeks. So again, based on what they're interested in, and a consensus model of decision making within the group. But I guess I would emphasize that the program isn't just about creative skills or writing skills, although it is about that. And that's important because lots of people haven't completed high school or are looking to improve their writing skills. But most importantly, I think it's about the relationships that we build within the classroom and that the men build amongst themselves and then also between the facilitator and the men. So relationships are key, developing trust, so trust within the group, and then for the participants, trust in themselves and their voice, developing their voice and their perspective is really a central part of what we're doing. It's also about sort of risk, taking a risk, and, you know, in a correctional context where obviously hyper-masculinity, toxic masculinity, sort of suppression of emotions and the sort of tough guy exterior is really valorized, I think, within the context of the class, sort of taking a risk at building relationships and trying to make that as safe a place as possible to do that is really important. I mean, we're not naive. We understand we're in a correctional context, so it's not, you know, it's not this idealistic safe space, but it is a space in which the men are cultivating relationships with each other that aren't built on violence or toxic masculinity, that are built on sharing and respect for each other. I think it's important the program provides access to education, because outside of the core correctional programs that are offered, there is one teacher therapist at the Saskatoon Correctional Center for over 400 men, and that teacher therapist, as I understand it, now this is not, I don't have documentation to back this up, but as I understand it, that person has no budget or very little budget, and so what he can do is very limited. And he's mostly focused on GED or high school equivalency training, right? But how many men can he work with if there are 400, right? So not very many. And so access to education is an important component of what we're doing, and also building bridges between the outside and the inside. So developing those relationships between the facilitators and the men, breaking down some of the stereotypes that might exist for people on the outside about, you know, who's inside a jail and who they are. Ultimately for the program, we hope that it will become self-sustaining. We have many more men than we do facilitators, and sort of in the conversations around the manifesto, the men have been talking about, you know, how they are interested in being mentors, in teaching each other, right, in facilitating classes themselves. And so I'd like to see us move towards that kind of more sustainable model, and where it's not just people from the outside who are coming in, but also within the institution, that the men are working with each other.
Cool. That's a really exciting direction for things to go in. You're listening to an interview with Nancy Stibendale. She's a professor at the University of Saskatchewan in Saskatoon, and she's also a facilitator with the Inspired Minds program, which meets at the Saskatoon Provincial Correctional Center and works with folks who are on remand and who are sentenced, working on writing projects together. So we initially got in touch about the manifesto itself, and you talked about it a little tiny bit. For folks who haven't heard of it, it's called A Doorway Out of Darkness. Do you want to talk more about who was involved in writing it and how it got written and what its purpose was?
Sure. So the manifesto is written by one of the Inspired Minds classes that was happening in the past couple of months. So it's a relatively small group of men who are responsible for the document. But having said that, I would say that what they have to say in the manifesto is reflective of what I've heard from many men in the institution throughout my time there since 2011. So it was written by a small group of men, but I do think it is representative to a certain extent. The manifesto itself is based on another manifesto, which is called Nothing About Us Without Us, a manifesto by people who use illegal drugs. And that's quite a popular, sort of in the social justice world, quite a popular manifesto, is created by people who use illegal drugs, who are involved in the international network of people who use drugs and other organizations. But basically, this idea of nothing about us without us is the key concept, and we carry that through into our manifesto. So that's the idea, I mean, pretty much as it sounds, but that's the idea that people who are most impacted by policy should be involved at the center of policy decisions, right, as opposed to at the periphery. So I think lots of people in the mainstream have the assumption that people in power know what's best, right? So people with sort of the formal education or people who are in government or et cetera, that they know what's best and that they can make those decisions and then apply them to other people. But what we're saying and what this idea of Nothing About Us Without Us is saying is that the people who are impacted, in this case the men in the correctional, are best qualified to speak about their needs and the kinds of programs and education that would be helpful to them. So instead of, again, instead of this top-down approach where other people make decisions that impact their lives, they're saying we need to be listened to, and we know we're not ignorant. We know what would be best and helpful for us given our situation. In terms of the writing process, it was a collaborative process. So I brought the idea. I brought the idea to the men because Len Finley from the Land People's Justice Initiative contacted me and asked, because I had been part of this previous conference, if I wanted to submit a manifesto. And I thought, well, I can write a manifesto on the right to education in prison, but it's not in line with our philosophy as a program, right? And it's not in line with that idea of Nothing About Us Without Us. So I took it to the men and I said, are you interested in writing something like this, something to do with justice? And of course we focused in on education because that's what we're doing in the Inspired Minds program. And so it was a collaborative process. We went through, I think it took us about 5 weeks. We went through about five different rounds. I go into the jail once a week, and so we would have different versions that I would put together based on our conversations and based on their collective writing. I would sort of compile all of that, take it back, and then we would edit it as a group. They would tell me what they wanted changed, what they wanted included, and then I would go back and work, because they don't have access to computer or that sort of thing. So I would go back and work on that and then come back and present with them with the revisions. So, and so we went through until everyone was happy with everything that was included there. And we used a consensus-style decision-making process to go through. Everyone had to be okay with everything that was included and all of the word choice. The words that are included in the manifesto are direct quotes from all of the men's writing, and it's just compiled. So about 10 different people are working on this, and it's all of their words sort of compiled into one document. In terms of the purpose, I wish one of the men could talk to it, but in my understanding of the purpose, we're trying to raise awareness about the need for more educational programming in jail and about the current lack of resources that exist. We're trying to break down some of the stereotypes that people on the outside might have about people in jail. So that's, I mean, the manifesto starts by talking about some of the stereotypes that people on the outside might have, and by the men then asserting who they are, right? They're not these stereotypes. They are their own people with an interest in education. One of the other purposes was to show the need for inmate-directed and developed programs. So again, this idea of Nothing About Us Without Us, and the idea that they are, you know, competent and interested in designing their own programs and in working with others to do that. And we wanted to also show the kinds of educational programs that they're interested in. So we spent a lot of time brainstorming sort of what they thought was needed. And so there's a whole section there that talks about the kinds of education, right, in Indigenous languages. That's particularly important in Saskatchewan, and anywhere in Canada, but there's a real interest in Indigenous languages, in learning Cree, which is not something that they have, you know, access to currently. There's a real interest in learning about human rights and what their rights are and what their legal rights are as well. We also had many conversations about voter rights, and this is something that we're going to pick up on in the next little while in terms of sort of mobilizing people within the jail to vote, because that's one of the ways, of course, that we can make these policy changes that we'd like to see long term is by having people in government who are interested in doing that sort of work. We talked about the need for more, holistic approach to education, right? So they focused a lot, and that's coming out of an Indigenous perspective as well that looks at the physical, the mental, the emotional, and the spiritual aspects of a human being, and understanding that education needs to address all of those components of a person. In terms of purpose, we wanted to illustrate sort of the range of programs that they thought were needed. And then ultimately, the point is to initiate change at the policy level and to make something happen that we understand is a long-term goal, right? And we'll need a lot of people to disseminate the manifesto and people to talk about it and other people to work on their own manifestos, that sort of thing, so we can sort of have a movement around this in the country.
So we're going to air the contents of the manifesto before this interview, and you just highlighted a bunch of it. Are there any other parts of the manifesto in particular that you think warrant extra attention?
Yeah, I think maybe I addressed quite a few of them. I would underscore the limited resources, and in one of the footnotes, and I don't know if the footnotes will be read, but in one of the footnotes we note the one teacher therapist for over 400 men. We also note in the footnotes that the United Nations defines education as a basic human need and a human right, and the United Nations has also affirmed the right to education in prison. And so I think that's really important to highlight as well. There's one section in the manifesto that says our experience of education has often been traumatic, confusing, ostracizing, and disabling. The history we were taught was not our own. There were few supports for our needs. We felt like we did not belong. To me, that's a really important paragraph that speaks to the men's previous experience of education. And so there's a larger critique there of the public education system, of the way that, and most of the men in the correctional center and then in the Inspired Minds class, most of the men are First Nations or Métis. And so what they're saying there speaks to this larger critique of the education system and how it has presented a colonial version of history, right? And how many Indigenous peoples have experienced being pushed out of the education system because their history and culture is not respected or centered or privileged within that system, right? And so there's this, when we're thinking about education and corrections, I think there's that larger context that also needs to be considered. Also, some of the men in the correctional have experience with being in residential school, and so there's that horribly traumatic experience there that comes into play whenever we're talking about education, especially in a colonial context. What else? So I think that the idea of Indigenous perspectives, and that comes up throughout the manifesto in a number of different ways, that's very key, right? And again, Indigenous people, the men being at the center of defining what kinds of programs are useful to them given their own subject positions, history, culture, etc. Empowerment is another thing that I would stress. I think that we use the word empower. We have the capacity to empower ourselves and others. That idea of empowerment was something we talked about in the group quite a bit, that the manifesto is a form of empowerment and that the men see it as a way of empowering themselves and other people. And then the last point, just just to highlight again the idea that education should be available to all people inside jails and prisons, including those on remand. And there's a footnote as well that explains, you know, that many times people who are on remand, if they're released with time served, they will not have had any access to any programming while they are inside, right? And that's something that the men really wanted to stress as important, accessibility to education for everyone.
Okay, that's it for my questions, Nancy. Do you have anything to add or anything that you think I missed?
Okay, so I asked the men about this. I asked the men what they, if there's anything that they wanted to add, and they said that there is more to come, so they're continuing to work on sort of elaborating this, expanding. We're looking into sort of current policy on education in the provincial system in Saskatchewan. So we don't want this to just be, you know, a manifesto that they wrote and that has been distributed and that's it. So there's more to come. They also wanted to stress, and there's a recent article in the Star Phoenix, our newspaper here, on the overcrowding at the Saskatoon Correctional Center. So right now, or as of the end of July, there were 490 men housed at the jail, and the absolute capacity of that jail is 434. So it's overcrowded beyond, I mean, and that's with double bunking and all of the horrible conditions that we are familiar with. So the overcrowding issue is a huge concern. I think it is across the country, but here it is especially right now. It's just in, you know, crazy proportion or extremes here. And there's been a number of incidents. At the end of July, there were sort of disturbances, and people were moved out of the jail, and people were relocated. And I mean, it's overcrowding leads to a lot of distress for everyone, not only the people who are incarcerated, but also the guards. So we need to look at that, and we need to think about, you know, what kind of changes do we want to make to our larger justice system and correctional centers, right? And so this is where the conversation about voting and trying to raise awareness on the importance of voting for people inside and how that's important to making change within correctional centers. And the last thing, yeah, we see ourselves, or the men see themselves, as part of an international, national movement on the right to education. And so they say this at the bottom of the manifesto, but they would love for people to adopt the manifesto, to use it as a basis for creating their own manifesto, to reproduce it, to distribute it. And so I'm encouraging people who are, you know, listening to do that, to work on their own versions of the manifesto. And if anyone is interested in doing some sort of collaboration or some sort of connection across institutions, then I would ask them to contact me, and my information can be found online.
Do you want to also give a mailing address for yourself in case the folks who want to contact you are inside?
Yes, that's a great point. Okay, so my mailing address is 320 Arts Tower, University of Saskatchewan, Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, S7N5A5.
Cool.
Okay, thanks, Virginia.
Thank you. That was an interview with Nancy Van Stuyvendale. She is a professor at the University of Saskatchewan in Saskatoon, as well as a facilitator for the Inspired Minds program, which meets weekly at the Saskatoon Provincial Correctional Center. People involved in the Inspired Minds program created the manifesto A Doorway Out of Darkness, which focuses on education and demands around justice in the criminal justice system. And you can check that out online or listen to the earlier portion of this show where we aired the entirety of the manifesto.
The time is presently 5:39, and you're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca. This next piece is a piece we received specifically for our special Prisoners Justice Day broadcast.
To start, here's a big shout-out to all the committed listeners of Quality Prison Talk Radio. A few weeks ago, at one of our weekly prison meetings, we were invited to submit something for the upcoming Prison Justice Day to be read on the radio, CKUT 90.3 FM. I finally got off my lazy butt, and here is my modest contribution. Recently, our group had the honor of talking to Melissa Munn when she graciously offered to be a guest speaker at our institution. Melissa has been involved in prisoners' rights and getting that message outside prison walls for 25 years. Yeah, that long. She cut her teeth back in the day working with many groups and individuals, including the late legendary Claire Colleen. Not too shabby in the qualifications department, eh? And wow, what a dynamic speaker she was. Exuded high-octane energy aimed with a honed confidence at the many areas of prison interest. She knew what she was talking about, and that shone through. No pun intended when I say she had a captive audience hanging on her every word. Her impassioned speech led me to reflect on what I've experienced over the years. I've been doing time since before there was a PJD and have been an active participant for August 10th Remembrance from day one. We are all aware of the events that led to the birth of PJD. For me, that day shines a light on the past brutal abuse of human beings convicted, rightly or wrongly, to change behind steel bars and concrete walls. No longer citizens with rights, but faceless numbers that faded from sight and memory obscenely fast. Eddie Nayland died August 10, 1974, in the hole at Millhaven Pen, where he was buried away for involvement in the Kingston Pen riot. Then on May 11, 1976, Robert Landers, a prison organizer, died of a heart attack in the Millhaven hole. Murder is a more apt word, as the guards admitted to intentionally turning off the cell alarms. Of course, our government didn't assign such blame to their own employees in a subsequent inquiry. There wouldn't have even been an inquiry if not for people outside prisons, families, friends, community activists, and numerous other groups and individuals. Matter of fact, there would not be a worldwide PJD as we know it if we had one at all, if not for all those outraged voices demanding truth and justice. So now and then say a silent prayer of thanks for those who freely sacrificed their time, energy, and souls to fight for prisoners who would have remained voiceless shadows hidden from sight. We got a certain degree of justice, far from all we wanted and needed. There are still many old and new, more dangerous attacks on prisoners' rights seemingly coming out every other week. For a large degree, our federal government under Harper and its far-right conservative ideologues are responsible. Actually, not just against prisoners, but a threat to all freedom-loving citizens. If you have a government who passes insane laws against criminals and terrorists well beyond what is needed just to get votes to be re-elected, our country's hard-fought human rights are chipped away, never to return. Prison activists battling this government and their propaganda, it's a never-ending struggle. It's not glamorous, it's not pretty. The victories are rare, but even the small personal ones tells them and all prisoners that it was worth every ounce of willpower, every drop of sweat or tear. It reaffirms the driving force behind our every action, that prisoners are human beings who must never be tortured and abused by government or society just because they were labeled a criminal by man-made laws. On an ending note, admittedly a touch biased, but honestly so, with no negative reflection on any of the many other groups and individuals fighting the good fight, I have to include a few words for my group members. They have been, in the 2 years I've known them, the embodiment of whatever idea you have of someone you would want fighting for you and all your brothers and sisters behind bars. They care. Most have been doing this for some time, some for a long time. Until you actually meet these dedicated people on a regular basis, you have no idea how much they personally sacrifice for us. Strangers to them at first. They work day jobs. They have their own families and social lives, yet they selflessly share their limited time with us. That's what you call commitment with a capital C. I hope one day to honor that commitment by being one of their small personal victories. Long live the Termite Collective. Yours truly, Eugene.
That was a piece we received for our special Prisoners Justice Day broadcast today.
Up next, we have another manifesto. This one was written by a group of prisoners in a Canadian federal prison. The manifesto is very much a draft, but we wanted to share it with our listeners on the occasion of Prisoners' Justice Day.
Some things happening inside that we think are unjust.
We should have access to a pension once we reach the age of 65 in order to be able to keep helping our families on the outside and to pay off debts we may still have on the outside. We pay for room and board. We pay a lot for room and board. And the so-called services we get in return don't match up. We don't even get real milk inside anymore. We just get powdered milk.
We should have access to educational opportunities on the inside. In the last 20 years, Canada has cut almost all trade programs available inside. They have cut off our access to outside education. We should have access to education about technology. Progressive changes to technology on the outside leave us unable to function once we get out.
We protest the closure of the prison farms. We used to have access to food items that we had been involved in producing, food items that were way more affordable than anything we now have access to. The prison farms also worked as a therapeutic program. Caring for animals and plants was a great program opportunity.
We protest the cuts to our wages. We should have access to real wages, not pennies. CORCAN is a separate entity of CSC. Its mission was to provide meaningful employment and skills and a way for long-term offenders to keep their families together and short-termers to build some money for release. In fall 2013, prisoners' pay was cut. The bonuses and incentives that prisoners used to receive for working at CORCAN have been taken away.
Even as we protest cuts to wages, we decry the lack of job opportunities inside prison. We protest the lack of job opportunities for prisoners who have been released. We protest the discrimination that happens in jobs on the outside against ex-prisoners, especially when the job one is applying for has nothing to do with why one ended up in prison.
We protest the medical services inside prison. Many people inside wait for years to find out what exact surgery they need and then are put on another long waiting list for that needed surgery. Some folks inside operate on themselves instead of waiting years for surgery.
We protest the transfer of prisoners based on unproven allegations.
We protest the lack of privacy both inside prison and when on parole or probation.
We protest the lack of education about the impact of prisons on our communities on the outside. Many people are sent back to jail for something that could have been dealt with in the community. Many people are sent back to prison for things that are not crimes. So much information on prisons on the outside focuses only on the high-profile cases. So much media attention just serves to amplify unfounded fears.
We believe prisoners deserve the right to a second chance.
Left.
This next piece is a tribute of sorts. In it, three people talk about a friend of theirs who died inside. They talk about how he died and some things they remember about him. The piece ends with an indictment of the prison system.
Wanted to do a tribute for our friend Steve, who died inside in January of this year, 2015. And Steve was a friend of ours for like 4 or 5 years, and he was really into fighting, all sorts of different kinds of fighting, like MMA and boxing and other things too. And he was really awesome, and we really miss him, so we wanted to do a little tribute about him for the Prison Radio Show.
Yes, and with August 10th coming up, I knew Steve for 4 or 5 years, and I've done 31 years in the prisons myself. And it was a shame Steve had the kind of personality, and he'd been bullied all his life, and that bullying seemed to continue on through unaccountable staff members and parole officers that just basically drove the man to where he couldn't see any hope, and he made a terrible mistake and went the wrong way, and it happens to a lot of guys inside, and it's a shame. And on August 10th, that's where we stop and remember them. Route 41, home to my father, first cousin and son,
and I visit on every... And I was just talking about how he's Francophone, and when I first met him, he was like trying to learn English really hard, and he was picking it up so fast, but would like still apologize to everyone for his terrible English all the time, which was like so silly because he was so good at it. And he would bring books that he was reading, and he would bring the magazines that he was like really stoked to have gotten inside. He would bring his magazines to the group to be like, yes, I finally got this one, you know, it's like the March issue, and I know it's November, but like I finally got my hands on it. And he wanted to share them with like the other folks in the group so that it wasn't just like him benefiting from this magazine subscription.
Yeah, and we sort of made a connection because I also enjoy fighting, and so we talked about that a lot. And I knew him mainly through letters and sometimes visits. And he even went so far as to wanting to like encourage me in my fighting capabilities as to give someone a book, so him on the inside giving someone a book to bring to me on the outside. So I just think that's like a really huge indication of what his personality was like, and sort of, I don't know, and I think it's actually kind of rare to find anybody who wants to support or, you know, really encourage, like, a small female-bodied person to fight and to engage in, like, those types of things. And he was somebody who was really like, yeah, go for it, do it, you know, be somebody who has the ability to take care of yourself. That's a really important thing. And also with the French, like, I was trying to learn French, and he was always asking me how my French progress was going. He would write me letters half in English, half in French, and so... like just super aware and supportive of how other people are doing. And we also wanted to talk a little bit about the context right before he killed himself. Basically, the way that I see it a lot is he was in like the circumstances made it such that was one of the only decisions that was available to him. And it was, his father was really sick, and they kept on dangling this possibility of him going and being able to get his outings back so he could go and visit his father. And then shortly before he killed himself, he was told that he wouldn't get his visits back. So he was not going to be able to go and see his father or accompany his father while his father was dying. You know, he would never be able to see his dad before his dad died. So while it's bullying, there's also institutional bullying, and thinking a lot about the institutional power that they, like how much power the institution has over people's lives and how they can manipulate and fuck with people in such an intense way. And that... I don't know. That's not just bullying. That's the power that a society is founded on, and is really, really clear in prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the story that I was told from people was that they had like arbitrarily changed the policy inside so that in order to get family visits, you had to go in front of the parole board, which takes like 6 extra months to a year. And they told everyone that this policy had changed on fucking Christmas Eve.
And so it was like, you know, Christmas is a fucking hard time to be inside, and to give people that kind of terrible news, like, around that time of year is just, I think it's so calculated and so meant to just, like, mess with people.
Fuck prisons for taking our friends away from us and from taking these people away from us who actually do play really significant roles in lives that are on the outside as well.
To my mother, stepbrother, and son.
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show's Prisoners Justice Day show. That piece was made by three folks who had a friend die inside this past year. They talked about their friend and what he was like and shared some stories of their time with him. The time is presently 5:55, and you're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca. To end our show today, we have a short piece, which is an advertisement of sorts for a writing project called Dawn Rising. In the piece, two people read out the text of a letter asking for submissions to a project that will be coordinated from outside prison, but is asking for submissions from people within prison. The topic of the writing project centers around the question, how do you keep going inside? Keep listening for more details.
This is a call out from some folks who are organizing a writing project with folks inside, and we're going to read you the call out, and the address is at the end. So if it seems like an interesting writing project to you, we would love to hear from you.
We are writing to you with respect as we start this new project. We are looking for submissions of writing, poems, stories, essays, visual art, comics, whatever you make that expresses what keeps you strong while incarcerated. We want to know what keeps you sane, grounded, connected, and inspired. We want to know what keeps you from cracking, from snitching, from giving into negative power dynamics, feeling isolated or apathetic. Our desire is to create a compilation to share with other prisoners. We are hoping that this compilation can inspire folks on the inside and break isolation. We also see this as a resource for people on the outside to better support and connect with people on the inside. Lastly, we hope that people on the outside who are facing potential incarceration can find strategies for surviving their sentence through reading this publication. Our hope is to receive submissions by January 2016 and have the project published by summer 2016. We intend to distribute the publication to all prisoners for free and have it for sale to those on the outside as a way to pay for publishing costs. Anything that we generate that exceeds the project costs will be distributed to various prisoner support or anti-prison efforts. Submissions are open to all past and present prisoners, whether or not they are considered political. We do reserve the editorial decision as to what gets published. Please keep submissions limited to about 1,000 words for artwork, 2 pages. We're just a few people from no organization who care about the millions of people who continue to survive on the inside. Through this project, we hope that breaking isolation through sharing stories of survival and resistance is one small step towards a more just world. This project is dedicated to all those who didn't survive incarceration and related repression. Please pass on our request for submissions to all those who might be interested, and please contact us for any clarification or questions. You can include a very short bio with your submission if you wish, or let us know if you want to be anonymous.
Submissions can be sent to dawnrising@qpirgconcordia, which is Q-P-I-R-G Concordia, care of Concordia University, 1455 de Maisonneuve West, and you can spell Maisonneuve M-A-I-S-O-N-N-E-U-V-E, Montreal, Quebec, H3G1M8.
Hey there, my name is Peter Collins. I'm a prisoner in Canada and have been for over a quarter century. I'm an activist, artist, author, and musician, and I face heavy-handed and illegal government censorship daily for the crime of being politically aware and outspoken. I hope you support marginalized voices in Canada by supporting CKUT, who gives a voice to everybody in the community. Listen to CKUT on 90.3 FM.
That last voice you heard was the voice of Peter Collins, a longtime political prisoner who sadly passed away this morning. We're going to read out a very short statement from the Peter Collins Peter Collins Support Committee.
Dearest friends, Peter Collins, our friend, brother, and comrade in struggle, passed away August 13th, 2015 at 2 a.m. He will always be remembered for his endless fight for justice, his sense of humor, his kind heart, and his unwavering integrity. His contributions to changing the world we live in will continue to live on through his art, cartoons, audio recordings, short films, and his writing. His spirit will live on through our hearts and minds.